It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.
Hello, leaders. This is Kurt Frankum with Leading LDS. Do you like the intro music, you know, with the whole loneliness of leadership from President Hinckley? You know, I love that talk and that quote, but I've been using it a long time. I don't know, I'm thinking about switching it up, and I feel like it's too long that people are probably just skipping past it anyways. But if you like it, if you want me to keep it, let me know. If you think, you know what, I just skip over it anyways, email me also and say, yeah, I just skip over it anyways. It should be shorter and more concise. Anyways, today I have another interview for you, and I'm excited to share it with you. It is a How I Lead interview. Now, How I Lead is a segment we have on the Leading LDS podcast, where I find the most prolific leaders out there in the church, and we interview them, and we say, so how is it that you lead, and why, and what do you do? What are your tips and tricks, and any ideas you want to share? And it really turns out to be a great interview, and this one is no exception. Lynn Luker is a Relief Society president in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we get into some interesting topics here. Obviously, she tells us kind of her unique approaches to, you know, visiting teaching and how she serves on a one-to-one leadership. We talk about her five keys of leadership, which are very inspiring and have a lot of good nuggets in them. We also talk about her experience of witnessing her ward being dissolved into another ward. And you can imagine the culture dynamics that can happen there, as everybody is comfortable with the friends in their ward, and now part of them are going to one ward and the other are going to another ward, and we have to live with it and figure out how to have unity in a ward. And I think there are probably many other leaders out there that are experiencing or have experienced a similar thing, and they're discouraged. And so hopefully, if you are experiencing that, you can listen to this interview and get some ideas of how they kind of got rid of the us and them mentality in their new ward that they were dissolved into. So, fantastic interview. There's nothing more to do than for you to listen to it. So here is my interview with Lynn Luker. All right. Well, we'll just jump into this. Lynn Luker, who's a Relief Society president in Las Vegas, Nevada. How are you, Lynn?
I'm fine, thanks.
Good. Now, you're in hot Nevada. What part specifically of Las Vegas?
It's called the Lakes area. It's near Summerlin on the west side of town.
Okay.
It's directly opposite from the temple.
Cool. And it's a beautiful temple down there, and I've had an opportunity to visit many times. I'm sure you appreciate the temple down the street.
Oh, yes, we do. Although people would like to have one on our side of town, but we need to use the one that we already have first.
All right.
Not being used to capacity yet. So
cool. Well, I'm sure you'll get there for sure. Now, have you always lived in Las Vegas or
no,
born or raised?
Or I grew up in Southern California.
Oh, wow. Okay. And what took you to Nevada?
Well, I first went from Southern California when my husband died to Salt Lake to take a nursing refresher course so I could get back in the workforce.
Wow.
Got a job in Salt Lake, and then they transferred me to Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. And how long ago was that?
That was the first time I came to Las Vegas was 96. And then I remarried and went back to Salt Lake and then came back to Las Vegas.
Oh, cool. All right. Great. Well, Lynn, obviously, as you know how these How I Lead interviews work, our goal here is just to talk about your experience serving, whether it's in your current calling as Relief Society president or others. We want to just hear your experience and what you've learned, what you've applied. And I'm sure others will appreciate that. And so let's just rewind a little bit and talk about just your upbringing. You said you're from Southern California. Was it a traditional Southern California Mormon family, or what was your upbringing like?
Well, it was not. My parents were both raised in strict religious families. My dad is a Presbyterian. My mom is a Catholic. So when they got married in 1940, they didn't want to have anything to do with religion. They didn't have any children until I came along 11 years later after they'd given up. And then when I came along, they still weren't interested. But from the time I was a small child, I can remember about 5 years old asking to go to a local vacation Bible school. And so wherever we would move, I would always find a Christian, either Presbyterian, Methodist, Lutheran, some church to go to on my own, which looking back seems a little crazy. But I just always had that inner desire to be associated with church. Then when I was in eighth grade, I think it was, some of the girls that were sitting around the homemaking table with me when, back in the day when they had homemaking classes, were talking about a mutual activity where they were going to have a dance and there was going to be boys. So they invited me to go, and that was the start of my association with the church.
Oh, cool. So how long did it take before you were baptized?
Well, I attended, and then I even started going to early morning seminary the next year, but my parents didn't want me to be baptized. They thought I wasn't old enough to make the decision. But then right before I turned 15, they said I had to wait till I was 16, but then they relented after they saw their slothful daughter get up and go to early morning seminary. They decided I really knew what I wanted, and so then I was baptized when I was
Nothing shows nothing shows more commitment than early morning seminary, for sure. Cool. So about your 15th birthday, your parents allowed you to be baptized. And have you been fairly consistently active since then, would you say?
Well, I was. I had a period of inactivity. I married my high school sweetheart. We were both 19.
Oh. Okay.
And we were married for 7 years and had two children. And then when the kids were 3 and 1, he got involved with his secretary, and we were divorced.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And I was devastated and very angry at everybody. And I moved. I went to a new ward, and immediately they asked me where my husband was and what priesthood he had.
Oof.
And that was just really hard. So that, and I thought up a lot of other reasons why it was more comfortable not to go. So for a couple of years, I didn't go to church. I got involved in the Methodist church again, and I was helping with a preschool that they were doing and really enjoyed the minister. And one day he called me into his office and he said, you know, we really need to have a program where we can contact the ladies at home. And I want you to set up something where you get a couple of ladies and they go together to see the other women.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, that's visiting teaching. I know all about that. And I started thinking, you know, if he would only teach from the Book of Mormon, I'd be happy again. And then it really started me thinking, what was I doing? Why wasn't I giving the gospel to my children, that gospel that I had looked so long and hard for? So then I became active again. And I had, in that time, married a man who had been exposed to the church when he was a teenager. He had gone to Mutual, and he'd been in road shows. So the seeds had been planted for him. So when I talked to him about my desire to go back to church, he was all for it. So we had the missionary lessons, and then we went on to be sealed in the temple.
Oh, great. So at that time, when you went back, your husband wasn't yet a member then, and he got baptized?
He wasn't not a member, no.
Oh, great.
But he was eager to do it. And then he went on to be in the bishopric and on the high council. And we were only married for 12 years, and then he died.
Oh, wow.
It was a sudden death. I found him dead in the middle of the night.
Oh, my goodness.
And my girls by that time were in high school.
So at this point, had already suffered a devastating divorce, and now you have a devastating death
right.
of your sweetheart.
But this time I told myself, I cannot do what I did before. This time I'm going to do it correctly. I'm going to rely on the Lord. I'm going to keep my testimony strong. And so I went about things a lot differently. Although I was very depressed. It took me a couple of years before I really started feeling like myself again.
Oh, I can't imagine.
But I think that those two experiences have really helped me relate to the sisters I work with now.
Yeah, that was my next question. How is that, how have you drawn on that experience as serving in the church?
Yeah, it's been amazing to see how people can relate and I can relate to them. When I taught Relief Society about a month ago, the sisters didn't really know too much about my background. I mean, because we just don't talk about those kinds of things.
Sure.
But I was talking to them about my fears towards the end of time when more and more of the faithful Latter-day Saints are falling away. the things we read on the internet and the ideas that we get in our heads. And I've been so worried about my sister, so I told them, you know, what it was like when I did become inactive and how I had this happen. And several of them told me later they were so surprised that they had had a divorce or a death. And then they felt like I really understood them better.
All right. Wow. Fantastic. And so, after your husband passed away, you said you kind of remained strong in the church and did you marry again?
Yes, I did. I know, it's great. Crazy, huh? But it was, my second husband died in 92 and I remarried again in 2001. So it was a long time I was single. And that also has helped because we have so many single sisters in the church. And now I really know what it's like.
Yeah.
To be single, to be a single parent.
And how would you speak to that as far as being a leader and ministering to those that are single from a Relief Society perspective? Any words come to mind?
Well, when I was called to be Relief Society president, the second counselor who had served with me when I was first counselor, she's a single gal in her late 30s. I kept her on, and the other counselor I chose was another single woman. And I think having two single sisters in the presidency really helped sort of validate things and make the other sisters feel comfortable. And they were able to really help pinpoint the needs of the sisters. We have about 30% or 33% single in our stake and in our ward. So we have a high percentage of single sisters through divorce or widowhood, you know, older sisters. And we have a lot of young or middle-aged single sisters too, who've never been married.
Yeah, I would say the percentage of my ward is maybe similar, and it is it's a unique thing. You know, it's something that me personally, who, you know, haven't been single as an adult, you know, as an older adult, it's hard to relate, and it's hard to truly understand when you accidentally cross the line or say something, you know, I regret later, or, you know, just not out of a, you know, not trying to hurt anybody, but I just don't consider some things that experiences people are experiencing at the moment. So I bet that experience.
Right. And sometimes their feelings are very fragile.
Yes.
You really have to be careful. Although they have the responsibility of being able to, you know, tough it out. But for some, in certain stages of their lives, it can be very, very hard. They don't feel validated, a lot of them.
Right. Yeah, I was talking to a sister a few weeks back who had been divorced, and she's remarried now. But she even said even the moments of singing Families Can Be Together Forever, you know, that was a hard song for her to get through. And I sing it like I don't give it a second thought, right? I just belt it out and away we go. So going back to, so you were married your third husband, and where did you meet him and how did that come together? I'm sure there's no, every situation's unique when people marry later on in life.
Right. And it was meant to be. I was taking college classes in California. I'm a licensed practical nurse, LPN.
Okay.
And I hadn't worked for years because I'd been home with my children. So I was trying to decide if I wanted to more involved in that again, or if I wanted to change over and do social work or something else. So I was taking college classes, and then I was looking through magazines trying to find a nurse refresher course. The only one available was in Salt Lake. So my oldest daughter was getting ready to go to BYU, and I told her, we'll just move up there with you and we'll all have share an apartment. She wasn't too happy with that. But I did move up there, and I took the class through Intermountain Healthcare and bought a home in a great ward in Murray. And there was a man assigned to be my home teacher, and his wife had died about a year before I lost my husband. No, I'm sorry, a year after I lost my husband.
Oh, wow.
And his youngest son was the same age as my daughter. I have two daughters. And they would come and be our home teachers.
Oh, wow.
And he was farther along in the grief process than I was. His wife had cancer, and he was more emotionally in tune with his feelings, and he talked to his children, and he would always try to draw me out and get me to talk about it. But I was so depressed that I didn't really want to engage too much.
Yeah.
And that went on for a couple of years, and then I moved to Vegas, and then my daughter decided to go on a mission. So we went back and had a little farewell for her with the former ward members, and he was our home teacher, and he was there, and he said, well, I'm going to write you an email when you get home to make sure you get home okay, because he knew this was going to be my trip on my own and my two girls had gone and I was really going to be by myself. So we started emailing, and we emailed for several years, and then all of a sudden we realized it was getting deeper and we were ready to have more of a relationship. So he came down here for a visit, and we went out to dinner, and then we corresponded, and then we got married.
Oh,
wow. Married my old teacher.
Nice. The typical BYU story, but not the typical, older single adult story.
Exactly.
Well, that's great. What a love story. So, and how long ago was that you got married?
That was in 2001.
Oh, great.
When we got married. Uh-huh.
Oh.
And we had four grandchildren born that year between the two of us, though.
Oh, my goodness.
And we both recognized that it was a huge blessing, and we felt so grateful that we decided to go on a mission. So in 2004, we served a mission in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, great. Cool. I bet that was quite the experience.
It was.
Great.
It was wonderful.
Cool. So now maybe tell us a little bit, let's zoom in more on your experience as Relief Society president. You're currently serving, that's your current calling. Is that accurate?
Relief Society president, yes.
Right, Relief Society president, right. And how long have you been in that calling?
Let's see, just over 2 years.
Oh, great, cool. And anything, when you were called, could you tell us a story about how you were called, anything unique happened, or was it basically just they called you in and extended the calling? Was there shock, surprise? How did that go?
I was very shocked. I have always worked in primary or young women. I've been gospel doctrine teacher. I've been seminary teacher. And 3 years ago, I was serving in a primary presidency as a counselor, and I thought, this is probably going to be my last leadership call. Then they realigned our ward, and the presidency I was in, we were all released. And so I thought, inside of my heart, I really felt excited. I thought, I'll be a pew warmer. I will go to every activity. I will support everybody. It's going to be great. I'm very happy with this. A few years before, I had been a nursery leader for 4 years, and I loved that calling. And it just devastated me when I was released, and I had never had that happen before. But this time, I was ready. So I thought, great. Although in the back of my mind, I always wondered, my patriarchal blessing says that I will serve with the women and the girls of the church. And I thought, well, I've never really served with the women, but I have served a lot with the girls. And I've been to girls' camp probably over 20 years, all told, and worked with girls and women there. So I thought, well, that's fine. Then they called me in and asked me to be first counselor in the Relief Society. The weird thing was, I had never really attended Relief Society for years because I had been serving in primary. I didn't know any of the sisters. I didn't even know the program. I didn't pay any attention. I didn't know that we had the president lessons. And
yeah.
So I was really ignorant.
Huh. Cool. So the bishop just called you in, and that was during, did you say that was right when the split was happening with the ward?
Right when the ward was reorganized. All the organizations they kept the Relief Society president that had been in the other ward.
Uh-huh.
And our Relief Society president was made the secretary. I was called to be the first counselor, and they kept the second counselor. So it was two from the one ward and two from the other ward.
Okay. And then how long after that until you became the president?
It was about eight months.
Oh, okay.
Because the other president moved.
Okay. And how would you describe the demographics of your ward? Or is it, I know in Vegas, some wards can be pretty condensed for outside of Utah.
It's a very small geographic area, yeah, which makes it really nice because we have our ward building kind of right in the middle of us, and we're all real small. There are a lot of members in Vegas. A lot of people don't realize that.
Sure.
But we have a very large LDS population here.
Now, you told me before we started recording that you have 13 apartment complexes in your ward. That is mind-boggling.
Yeah, and it's difficult. People get sucked in. They see a free month's rent, no move-in, whatever, and then they move in. And then when the rent, they have to start paying the rent, they're not able to afford it.
So they want a second and third month's free rent, right?
Yeah. So then we do have our welfare needs.
So there's a lot of, you as far as obviously you haven't been Relief Society president in other wards, but you would say that there is a higher than average request for welfare in your ward.
That's what I've heard in our stake. Yeah, we have a higher request, although we live in a fairly affluent area. And so we have very generous, vast fast donations. So
well, great.
It's really nice to great. See that people are willing to help each other.
Yeah, for sure. And what's your role? I know each bishop maybe, utilizes the Relief Society president differently when it comes to welfare. What's your role in that process with welfare?
There are a few that I do food orders for, but we also have two welfare specialists. Thank goodness, because I couldn't do it all. And one is a man and his wife, and they help, and then another older man who's done welfare for a lot of years. And they do the needs analysis. If there's problems with the bills and stuff, then they also get involved in that. And so that takes the load off me.
Oh, cool. So, and the bishop just calls them as a couple to be welfare specialists.
We started that. I've got a bishop that hasn't been in quite a year. The other bishop started it, and it's just continued. Sometimes the bishop will notify me that so-and-so needs a food order, and then I will just ask. Usually these welfare specialists have routine families that they take care of, and so then sometimes they'll get the food order forms from me, or sometimes they just go directly to the bishop.
Gotcha. And so your role is primarily the food order requests that come through?
Mm-hmm. That and commodities, yeah. I don't do anything. If they need help with a bill, then I have them call the executive secretary. I try not to get involved in any of that.
Right.
But there have been times when I've been told to go put such and such a bill on my credit card and then get reimbursed, and financial clerks don't like that too much.
Right. But it does happen. Sometimes you just can't get the check cut soon enough, and it's got to be paid. So do what you got to do. So, well, cool. So as I always do, I requested that you send me a list of some leadership principles that whether, you've discovered or kind of implemented as your time serving as Relief Society president, and how they've impacted your service there. And so maybe let's go through these and elaborate on how you've applied these things. The first one you sent me was know the sisters and visit them in their homes. So how has that been applied?
Well, like I said, when I first started, I didn't know, all I knew were the primary sisters. I didn't know most of the bulk of the Relief Society. So we had a lot of whispered conferences when we would be sitting up in Relief Society. I'd say, who's that in the yellow blouse? And who's that? And who's that? And studying on the LDS tools, the pictures, and we're really pushing that to try to get everybody's picture on there. That helped.
Yes.
But actually going into a sister's home and learning about her, how she joined the church, some of her callings, really helps you remember who they are, remember their names, and it gives you a better feel for who they are and what they like.
Cool. And do you have a kind of an organized approach as far as doing visits, or is it just a night a week you go out and knock on doors? Or?
Yeah, we go out on Sunday afternoons now. I have a fairly new presidency. My one counselor moved and we limped along for a long time, and I just got two new counselors and a new secretary. So for their schedules, Sunday afternoon works best. So about an hour after church ends, I make appointments and then we go. And visit.
Cool. And you said geographically, your ward isn't ridiculously spread out, so that's easy to do.
It's very easy for us. There's really no reason why we shouldn't.
Cool.
And sometimes if there's been a need, I will just go out myself during the day. My counselors work. And sometimes I'll take my husband with me if it's a situation where I think the priesthood needs to go. But we also have one night a month where we go, the stake comes with us. Our president calls it rescue night. And we take a stake leader with us and we go. So cool. we try to go visit.
Great. And the other next item you put is have charity. However, learn to be proactive, not reactive.
When I first started responding to some of the sisters with welfare needs, everything for them was an emergency and I would drop everything and try to fix it. And then I realized that some of these things, they need to learn the natural consequences. We had one young sister, very young, with two small children, and she was just coming back to church. And every Sunday she'd come, but then every Monday night she had a need to go to the emergency room, either for herself or a child. And on a couple of occasions, both of my counselors and I would take her to the emergency room and spend hours with her. We started to realize she just needed some more attention. So then one of my counselors who lived real close to her set up family home evenings on Monday night in lieu of going to the emergency room.
Oh,
it
wow.
seemed to meet her needs and those visits stopped.
Oh, interesting. So
that's
visit
what I meant
to
by
the,
being proactive.
the visit to the ER was just a need that got you to be with her for attention, yeah. Right? Wow.
Which is very sad, but and then when I read that book, Bridges Out of Poverty, I realized that some people are brought up that way and their lifestyle is a lot more chaotic than what I would consider, you know, calm, and they kind of go from crisis to crisis. And I would get sucked in with them and not realizing that I needed to take a step back and say, now, is this really an emergency? What's really going to happen, you know, if they don't have a pot roast for dinner, if they have to eat a sandwich, for instance,
right?
You know, that kind of thing.
Right. And maybe let's take a minute to talk about, we chatted about this book prior that we're both familiar with. What is, how did you get introduced to Bridges Out of Poverty?
Our son, who works for Deseret Industries, used it with some of the clients that he works with because he couldn't understand why they would be willing to give up their apartment in order to keep their car, make their car payment rather than a place to live. And I had a similar situation with a sister also who was willing to be evicted, but she wasn't going to give up her car. And I was just thinking that I had never been around and didn't know anything about. And so I started reading a little bit. I didn't read it cover to cover. It's pretty heavy reading.
Right.
But helped me understand that there's a different mindset than what I was used to.
Yeah. And this is a book, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on Leading LDS, maybe just in passing on a few episodes, but this is a book I was introduced to being involved in the inner city mission in Salt Lake City, where I have four service missionaries that are assigned to my ward that help me with temporal needs. And the inner city mission puts this training on based around this book. And I correct me if I'm wrong, Lynn, but I'm pretty sure that it's not written by LDS members by any means, nor is it.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, no mention
of it. Social workers and.
Yeah. It's more just speaking specifically about poverty in our culture and society, and kind of the different mind frames that people are in and how to approach them and why they do one thing when you do another. And it, like I said before, it really helped me as a bishop to stop treating people as if they're children. And not that I was overly demeaning and making them feel bad, but sometimes you look at them and you're like, this situation is so easy to fix. Like you just have to do right. ABC and it's fixed. So just do ABC and you're done. But anyways, there's so much more to understand about their background, their upbringing, and how they live day to day. And then it really kind of have that paradigm shift. And you're able to serve them more effectively because you understand them, right?
Right. And not be so judgmental.
Right.
Because I'd think, why did she make that decision?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I recommend any bishop or Leaf Study president. I think I got mine on Amazon.
I did too.
Yeah. I think it reads sort of like a textbook. So it's not the type that you're going to sit down and read cover to cover. But I'm that's one goal I have is to get the trainer from the Inner City Mission on the podcast to dive deeper into the principles there because it is so helpful. It really impacted the way I serve. And I require my ward council every so often. I take my whole ward council to the training and we sit through it. And, you know, it really opens our eyes to how to effectively serve these individuals. So I'm glad you mentioned it and brought
that's
it
fantastic.
Up. Now, another item you said is be an example, warts and all, know that you are serving at this time for a reason. What elaborate on that.
Well, like I said, when I gave my lesson a few weeks ago and I told them all the things that had happened in my past and how they could relate, when my husband and I went on our mission also, I felt very inadequate. He served a full-time mission, but I had never had any missionary experience. But the number of people that we encountered who had recently lost a spouse was just incredible. And so we figured that's why we were there for that. If nothing else, we were able to comfort these people and let them know there was life after losing a spouse and other things like that. When I was first put into the presidency, because of my nursing background, it just seemed to flow naturally. I had so many, and I still do, have a lot of sisters who have medical needs. And I'm able to be that sort of go-between. Sometimes I go to the appointments with them, help them to understand what the doctor's telling them. I go and give shots when needed. I've done, you know, done other things like that. So I feel like maybe I'm not the best person. I'm certainly not the best, most spiritual person in the ward. But for right now, I'm the one that's supposed to be doing this. But when I get discouraged, I just remind myself of that. The Lord is in charge, and I may goof up this area and that area, but in some cases, I'm the one he wants to do this right now.
Right. And I think the main thing you're saying there is just be authentic. Like, I love how you said warts and all, because, you know, we it's easy to, you know, if you're called as a bishop or Relief Society president or Elders Quorum president, and, you know, you're the leader now, you've got to set an example and look perfect, right?
Right.
That you figured it out. And so let me help you figure life out. But if you're just authentic and say, you know what, life goes rough for me or has gone rough, let's talk about it. That's going to draw people to you, and they will love you for that because you're authentic.
And so many of our sisters, they do. They come to church and they look at everybody with their little happy, perfect families, and they think everybody has it together but them.
Right.
Where it's just not true. Sure, there are some that might look good on the outside, but inside, once you get to know them, everybody has trials and struggles.
Yep. It's so true, for sure. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's a strong leadership principle. Just be authentic and let your warts show if they must, and people will love you for it. The other item you mentioned is delegate and then get out of the way. How have you gotten out of the way?
Oh, I have some great counselors. The two that I worked with prior to the ones I have now, I called them the party girls. They were the single gals, and they were really interested in putting on a lot of wonderful activities. And I just let them go. You know, they did some wonderful things. And now I'm teaching the ones I have now that I don't want to micromanage their calling. The new gal that's over the activities, she said, well, what would you like to do? And I said, it's your calling. You know, you figure it out and then just tell me how I can help you. And I really think that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Plus, I have too many other things.
It's true.
I mean, their callings too.
Yeah,
and I love it when they guide me, and they if I make a goof, they gently correct me and give me counsel, and it's just wonderful.
Yeah, and that's okay if they correct you. You know, we're all in this together, and got to be open to that correction for sure. Cool. Lastly, you put find joy in service. How have you found joy while being Relief Society president?
Well, I work on it. Some weeks are pretty grim.
Amen, sister.
And I try, in fact, with my last PPI with my bishop, I said, I just don't know how I can keep doing this, because I hear these struggles and I can't fix it. I can't find a job for this sister, and I can't make this one's husband come back. And he said, we have to remember the atonement and turn it over to the Savior. And so I've been trying to do that. And I try not to walk around as if I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders and be all doom and gloom, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Like on Sundays when people see me, I try to put the smile on and, you know, help them think that I'm happy about doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I wanted to go back and spend a little more time on this experience you had with having a ward that was dissolved. Maybe tell us just the basic story. What happened with that ward change?
Okay. Our stake had general realignment. Several wards were realigned. A couple were dissolved. And they made one next to us, quite small, because they expected a lot of growth. And our ward, the ward I was in, was the smallest ward in the stake. So they dissolved us and put us in with a larger ward. And we now are the largest ward in the stake. And the little one next to us has never grown. So they're very tiny. I keep offering to give them some of our apartments, but they keep saying no thanks.
You got plenty to go around, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was real interesting, but I really thought they handled it so well. Many things in the church are kind of kept secret until the last minute.
Right.
But the stake president sent a letter out, and he went around to each ward, and he said, we are having some big changes. Please come to our special stake conference on this date, and you'll find out. And they had a big slides. They showed maps, so everybody knew exactly what was happening. It was really done very well, very organized.
Wow, great. Now, obviously, there, it's not just on paper that the state presidency can draw pretty clear lines and, you know, everything looks well and like, wow, that'll be such an improvement. But then when the down on the lower levels with where existing friendships and relationships and you feel like you're being torn apart as a ward, and I'm sure that can, there's a lot of drama that can come up. What was that like?
Well, there's always drama when there's ladies involved. So our first several relief societies, well, it was months. We had the gals from the one ward would sit together and the ones from the other ward would sit together. And we kept thinking, how are we going to change this? I was a counselor at that time, so I agreed to have my visiting teaching shifted up. So I was being taught by somebody from the other ward, and I was teaching people from the other ward. And that kind of got it started. And we really concentrated on getting to know each other. We had a retreat. Now, my young party girls wanted to have an overnight retreat, but I knew we had young mothers and older women. And since we're so close to our building, we had a Friday night where we got together and we played games and we had food. And I think we had a video, but we played a lot of getting to know you games. Just kind of mix it up, and it was very casual. And then the next day, we met again and we had breakfast and we had a few workshop classes and lunch and more chances to just sit and visit and try to break down those barriers. So that really helped.
Yeah. So kind of being intentional about, it's easy to maybe sit back and say, give us some time. People will start to like each other, but really create a venue where people can come in and truly get to know each other.
We really did. We really were intentional about it because you need to be united. And our ward now, we have a lot of people comment that when they come into our ward, they feel very welcomed. We have a lot of people that will go up to a stranger and say, hi, how are you and what's your name and are you visiting or new? That was something that I never did. I had a friend who was a Relief Society president, and I would just go in and sit down in the chapel and watch her go and kind of work the room. And I thought, wow, she's really brave. I could never do that. And when I was Relief Society president, I realized that's what I have to do. That's right. What I need to do. And so I try to force myself to do it. I'm trying to get that mentality across to some of the other sisters. And some of them do it. We have our lady who came to the ward, took a taxi, doesn't have a car. She hadn't been to church in 30 years. She'd lived in different wards. But she thought, Heavenly Father, I'm going to try it one time. Older lady. She walked in, and another older lady saw her and broke into a big smile and grabbed her. And she said, hi, you've just missed sacrament meeting, but we're on our way to Sunday school. Come with me. And wow. It was just incredible. And now, they're best friends, and she picks her up for church. And just smiling at somebody, I know it sounds cliche, but it really can make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. So, and how long ago was your ward dissolved?
It'll be 3 years in September next month.
Okay, so now you sort of have, you've got some roots, and you feel like a consistent, established ward, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay. Anything else?
In fact, a lot of people don't even know. It's not us and them anymore, and we've had a lot of new people move in, so we're just homogenized now. It's wonderful.
Cool. Anything else as you think back that helped diminish that us and them thinking when that dissolve happened?
Well, we did start our Facebook page.
Oh, okay.
And it's a closed group, and a lot of people post on it, and they'll post spiritual things, or they'll say, I need a... or so-and-so needs a lamp. She doesn't have any lamps. Does anybody have a lamp? Little things like that. And then that brings people together, just something small like that. Or Sister Susie needs a ride to the doctor. Is anybody able to help her? And so connections can be made that way.
Wow, that's a practical, solid idea for sure.
We use our ward Facebook page a lot.
Cool. That's a great suggestion. Now, obviously, with serving, you're very busy week to week. How would you explain your typical week going from Sunday morning all the way to Saturday night?
Well, Sunday morning, the bishop has invited me to attend all the PEC meetings, so I get to go 7:45 every Sunday. It's either PEC or ward council. We have that about once a month. And then we have our meetings, and then after, a lot of times... Well, I've got a quite elderly sister that I take home after sacrament meeting, and then I come back, and if there's food orders or things that can't wait, I might do that during Sunday school time. Sorry to the Sunday school teachers. It's kind of bad not to attend that. But then after we do our visits, except for on Fast Sunday, the other three Sundays in the month, we try to do two or three visits. So I'm trying to focus on the primary, the sisters and the sisters that are serving in young women, and then new sisters or sisters that don't get out very much. And we try to visit them. And then Monday morning, very often, we go to the Bishop's Storehouse, which is about 30 to 40-minute drive from our house. Many of the sisters who need food either don't have a car or can't afford the gas to go get their order once we've filled it. So my husband is my third counselor, and he goes with me, and we get the food and then deliver it.
Cool.
We usually go, it's about once, sometimes we go twice a week, usually once a week. And then during the week, I'm just fielding texts and calls, you know, different needs, anything from I need a babysitter to I need a job to help me do this. And I didn't realize that a Relief Society president really needs to be a kind of a case manager, social worker type. The questions I've been asked have been incredible.
And what do you mean by that? Like just questions as far as where, how do you get food stamps or those types of things?
Yeah, we had one sister move in, an elderly sister whose husband died in California, and this gentleman was taking care of her, and so he moved her into an apartment in our ward, and we got acquainted with her, and he got arrested in California. Come to find out that he had, I don't know, you may want to edit this out, but I'm going to tell you, he had killed two people and had them stored in a storage unit over by this apartment. And she was next on his list. She was a lady that had post polio syndrome, so she couldn't walk.
Oh my goodness.
Got put in prison, there she was in this apartment all by herself, not able to drive or do anything, had two little animals. And so we were constantly going over there and making sure she had food and cleaning up after the pets and trying to help her. And she insisted on staying by herself. And finally, our bishop convinced her that she needed to go stay with a daughter in another state. But that was, I didn't know what to do. That happened right after I was put in as president. It was really
just a typical Relief Society problem there, you know, just holy cow. Interesting. And I would relate to, you know, kind of feeling like a social worker at times when you're tasked to do things and you think, you know what, I've never even thought about how to accomplish this because this is not a problem I run into a lot. Right.
Right. Somebody would say, well, my so-and-so is getting out of jail. Can you help us find a job for him? Or how he's going to be on probation, where can he live? And I don't know. But it seems like once you're called as a Relief Society president, you're supposed to be all-knowing. I guess like a bishop.
Yeah. And we are. You know, it's that easy. It just comes. No, I'm just kidding. So, let's shift gears a little bit here. And obviously, you have dealt with visiting teaching as a Relief Society president and as a counselor in the Relief Society presidency. Any unique approaches you've tried or tactics, anything come to mind?
We try to get very personal with it. And I will send them a note and I'll say, you know, are you having trouble meeting your sisters? And I say, I want it to be a blessing rather than a burden. And so we frequently change things around. Some of the older sisters have had the same sisters for 20 years and they don't want to change. And that's great. But sometimes if it just doesn't click either through schedules or personalities, then we try to mix that up. Now, I had one sister who seemed very shy and didn't want to go out. And I said, let me go with you and I'll meet your sisters with you. It's just that initial breakthrough. Or if I can introduce them at church, then sometimes that helps. But people don't like to really cold call someone they don't know, I guess. Although with texting and email, it seems like it would be easier to...
Sure.
To do, but we're still working on that. We did have a success in that we decided we needed to increase the spirituality and perhaps that would increase our visiting teaching numbers. So a couple of years ago, we developed this program. It was where we found it online, Read the Book of Mormon in 100 Days. And we printed up this cute little chart and it had a thought from a general authority and then a question and then the reading assignment. And we all started together. We gave them out on Mother's Day. We always like to do a big thing on Mother's Day for all of the sisters.
Oh, cool.
We get them out of their assignments, and we had like a big party as much as you can on Sunday and gave them this darling little bag with this cute little thing and a little pencil and a piece of chocolate. And then we all started together and we did it over the summer and we posted on Facebook, you know, how'd you like the reading this week? What did you learn from it? And then at the end, the activities committee came up with such a fun activity. We sat at tables with a little bag and then we had an assignment of acting out that scripture story from the Book of Mormon. And the sisters just went crazy. It was like being in Cub Scouts. And it really seemed to bring people together. We had a common bond. We were doing this, reading the scriptures together. We were all in the same area, and it really seemed to help.
What a fantastic idea. I love that.
Oh, yeah, great. It wasn't mine, but I was happy to run with it.
Cool. That's great. That's great. Well, Lynn, you know, as we were first communicating, you weren't sure if you'd have much to share, but I have evidence now that this is a fantastic interview, and I've no doubt that others will be blessed from it as they listen. And my last question I have for you, as I ask everyone, as you look over your time serving not only as Relief Society president, but other callings that have required a little bit of leadership, how has your experience serving as a leader made you a better disciple of Jesus Christ?
I think getting to know the One, because I think that was the example that he showed us, that every sister is unique and every sister is very, very valuable. And we are all daughters of our Heavenly Father, and he cares about each one.
Thank you, Lynn. You're an inspiration. Keep doing what you're doing. And what an inspiring Relief Society president you are. I hope you gained something from this. I loved her ideas of the Book of Mormon challenge in 100 days and the way they turn that into an activity and her approach to the, you know, getting to know the new people in the ward when that was dissolved. A lot of good things there. I hope you gain from it. And also an inspiring conversion story. And I can't imagine having going through heartbreak in a marriage and then, you know, witnessing heartbreak again as you lose your spouse. And wow, I'm so grateful that this world and this church has people like Lynn Luker. If you like How I Lead interviews, then you should let me know about it. And you can also, you know, every podcast does a thing where they tell you to go to iTunes and leave a review. And you should. I mean, there are people that are out there looking for LDS podcasts, and they're probably going to come across this one. And so if it has a lot of good reviews, they'll probably listen. And the mission of Leading LDS to enhance leadership, to make resources that will improve leadership available to the thousands across the world that are striving to be better leaders. That's our mission. And so the more we can get this message out there, the better. Another thing you can do is just call that uncle or cousin or brother who's a bishop or an Elders Quorum president or serves in the Relief Society president, whatever it is, and say, hey, check this out, or email them a link, put it on Facebook. That's how we're going to grow, and that's how we're going to get this mission out to so many that need it, that are praying for answers to be better leaders. So that's really probably the best thing you could do at this point. Another thing you could do is check out the Food Order Reference Guide and the Consequence Stick. That helps me fuel this project. There is some cost to it, and so I've got to... That's a great way for you to help. So, all right. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.